Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, April 2nd, 2015. Deadly attacks at a university in northern Kenya.
On my own behalf, on behalf of my government, I extend condolences to the families of those who have perished in this attack. We continue to pray for the quick recovery of the injured and the safe rescue of those still being held hostage.
And an umbrella group of opposition parties say the government has failed to bring peace to South Sudan, and now it's time for a national dialogue.
I'm sure if the people sit down, they will not be talking about who becomes president. They will be talking about health, about education, about reform, about how to correct the security system, how to get every economy in place.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for an attack on a university in northeastern Kenya, which has killed at least 70 people and injured 79 others, according to Kenya's Interior Ministry. Hundreds of students are unaccounted for. Witnesses say some students are being held hostage. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta offered his condolences to the families who lost loved ones in today's Garissa University College attack.
On my own behalf, on behalf of my government, I extend condolences to the families of those who have perished in this attack. We continue to pray for the quick recovery of the injured and the safe rescue of those still being held hostage.
Mr. Kenyatta went on to say he has dispatched authorities to the region where the attack occurred.
I also assure the nation that my government has undertaken appropriate deployment to the affected area and is fully seized of the situation. I also take this opportunity to urge Kenyans to stay calm as we resolve this matter and to provide the authorities with any information they may have in connection with any threats to our security.
Kenyan authorities have released a profile of a key suspect in the attacks. The statement says Mohamed Kuno is Al-Shabaab's Jabal leader for Juba region. Somaliland is in charge of external operations against Kenya. VOA's Gabe Joslow reports many students are still believed to be trapped inside as security forces conduct operation to flush out the militants.
Well, we just heard from the Interior Secretary that there have been more than or at least 70 people killed in this attack on Garissa University and at least 79 others wounded. It sounds like the operations are still going on to some degree, so the final death toll could be higher than that. Earlier, we had heard that there were hundreds of students still unaccounted for. So until we know where those students are, there's really no saying what the final number is.
We're hearing it's Al-Shabaab that carried out the attack. Is there any word on if they've arrested anybody?
The authorities have said they arrested one suspect, that four suspects terrorist suspects have been killed. And then the Kenyan police had been circulating some information about somebody named Mohamed Kuno, who is an Al-Shabaab commander, who they say has been responsible for the external operations again.
What's the situation now that you're hearing right now?
At the moment, we are hearing that the operations were intensifying. We've heard that some of the hostages, if not all of them, have been released, and we're just waiting to get more information on the final sort of casualty numbers.
That's our East Africa correspondent Gabe Joslow reporting on the latest on the attack on a Kenyan university in northeastern Kenya. Switching now to Juba. The National Alliance, an umbrella group of South Sudanese opposition political parties, is calling for a national dialogue to confront the challenges facing South Sudan. The group says the government's recent decision to extend its mandate by 3 years should have been made after officials consulted other stakeholders in a national dialogue conference. Charlton Doki has more for VOA from Juba.
The group says the leaders of the two warring parties, which caused the ongoing conflict, failed to resolve their differences and restore peace. The alliance says the only way to end the impasse in the peace talks and prevent the country from being put under a joint AU-UN trusteeship is to involve all stakeholders in addressing the nation's problems.
We call for all-inclusive national dialogue conference on which political parties and the civil society organizations shall take part to chart out the path to the attainment of peace in our country.
That's Martin Aligo, Secretary General of the National Alliance, reading a statement at a news conference in Juba yesterday. Aligo says opposition political parties want a proposed dialogue conference to discuss and agree on
evaluation of the peace process so far, the national roadmap for the attainment of peace without clear goals and timelines, formation of a board-based interim government, the mandate of which is to implement this peace program. It is the credibility of such a government that can get the country out of the current international isolation.
Aligo criticized the government for amending the constitution to extend its mandate, saying such action should only have been taken after wider consultations with political parties and civil society organizations. But he says there is still time between now and July 9th when the mandate of the current government comes to an end. He says instead of rushing to amend the constitution, government officials should have devoted more time to ending the conflict.
But should the parties fail to conclude the peace agreement for one reason or the other up to the month of May, then the South Sudanese would have sat down and consider what to do next, like what happened in the 2010 South-South Dialogue Conference, which gave birth to the current constitution.
Government spokesman Michael Makwei Lweth dismissed the alliance's recommendations at his own news conference in Juba today.
The opposition, which was against elections, is now against the extension, is now against the amendment of the constitution. Then what do they want? This is a clear case of anarchy, and this is not acceptable.
SPLM leader Lam Akol Ajawin says the warring parties have tried for too long and have failed to resolve the conflict. What's needed now, he says, is fresh input from other stakeholders.
I'm sure if the people sit down, they will not be talking about who becomes president or who becomes prime minister or who becomes the first vice president. They will be talking about health, about education, about reform, about how to correct the security system, how to get every economy in place.
It does not appear the government is ready to act on the alliance's recommendations anytime soon. There are reports that new IGAD-led peace talks involving the African Union, the European Union, the Troika, and negotiators from five African countries will take place in Addis Ababa in the coming weeks, but so far no details have been released on those talks. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
The United States is also sending a strong message to the warring parties to reach a peace deal. President Barack Obama this week signed an executive order stating that South Sudan's conflict poses a threat to U.S. national security and foreign policy. The document extends executive order signed a year ago for another year. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins tells South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam that an executive order like this one on South Sudan allows a U.S. president to either clarify or extend an existing law.
In this case, President Barack Obama announced he would be notifying leaders of the U.S. House and Senate that he would be continuing a national emergency declaration for South Sudan. In his order, the president cited what he called an unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security and foreign policy of the United States. He said that was as a result of the conditions in South Sudan and the surrounding region. He cited concerns including widespread violence, human rights abuses, recruiting child soldiers, and attacks on peacekeepers. As a result of those concerns, the president said he had decided to continue a national emergency declaration that took effect on April of 2014 for one more year.
So as far as these executive orders go, then he must declare it a national emergency, and then in that way he gets the money basically to fund this again, right?
Yes, and also the extension means that the U.S. has continued concerns about South Sudan's unrest. which has been brought on, of course, by the ongoing strains between President Salva Kiir and his former Vice President Riek Machar. At the State Department, spokeswoman Marie Harf articulated some of those concerns in a March briefing as the U.S. reacted to a stalled effort for the two leaders to negotiate peace. Harf called South Sudan's conflict a tragedy for its people. She said, as the country's humanitarian catastrophe continues, more than 2 million people have been displaced at a time when one of the world's worst food security crises was underway. She said the entire region has been facing economic, security, and humanitarian costs from the conflict. And Carol, as you mentioned, the U.S. is one of South Sudan's leading international donors and has been providing significant humanitarian assistance to the country since 2013. The State Department says that assistance includes helping to provide basic services to citizens, efforts to combat poverty, and support in helping the country to promote an effective and inclusive government.
So by that, that would mean that we are helping in nonviolent ways. Do you know how much we are giving to the South Sudanese government for these kinds of actions?
I know it is significant, with the U.S. being one of the major players in helping in the establishment of South Sudan. The U.S. has been one of the new country's biggest supporters and continues to be, even though there are ongoing concerns about the unrest.
That's VOA's State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins speaking with Carol Van Damme earlier today in Washington. The new leader of South Sudan's National Youth Union is calling on the country's young people to reject violence and tribalism and become forces for positive change. Albino Boldu says the government and rebels must stop using young people to fight their wars and let the youth focus on nation building. VOA fellow Michael Atit spoke with Bol from Washington.
Bol says South Sudan's young people have a strength in numbers. If they unite under the youth union, they will have the power to stand up to the tiny minority that holds power in the country, he says.
We as youth of the South Sudan, we are constituting about 70% or 72% of population, which means the majority are youth. And these politicians who are using us as tools to achieve their goals are just a minority. They cannot even exceed 2% or 5% of population. So how can we accept ourselves to be used as tool?
32-year-old Bol is a medical doctor who originally comes from northern Barghazali State. Last week, he became the first ever elected leader of the youth union. Bol was elected to the post at the General Conference in Juba that was attended by more than 330 young people from around South Sudan. Bol says young people must take the lead on development and governance issues in South Sudan, just as the certain number of government posts in South Sudan are reserved for women. Bol wants there to be a quota for young people in the government.
I'm demanding from the government to allocate 20% as is proposed now in next coming election or reshuffling of the government. Does this 20% of the youth must go directly to them?
Bol says the country's youth should start looking at themselves as South Sudanese citizens instead of members of a particular tribe.
It was not a multiple choice of me to be from a certain tribe. It was naturally. God was not mistaken to create us from 64 tribes. Why are we making a big proud in something you didn't pay even an effort?
He says the union will work to make sure more jobs are created in both the public and private sectors and that the young people have the qualifications to do those jobs. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese officials deny targeting diplomats from Troika in a new visa rules. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Have you or your relatives received good care at your local hospital?
No, because the medical attention patients usually get are delayed. So because of that, patients in critical conditions usually pass away.
Honestly, hospital is there, especially in my area. We have hospital. It is something like 2 or 3 hospitals. Mm-hmm. But the issue, we are lacking a lot of things. We are lacking doctors. We are also lacking the equipment. So if you can see the hospital without any activities or without any help, it is useless.
The local hospital cannot actually serve the population there. So the load makes them not deliver good service.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's foreign minister says his country has instructed its embassies not to issue visas to diplomatic passport holders without prior approval from his ministry and the Interior Ministry. Barnaba Marielle Benjamin denies that the new visa procedure is targeting diplomats from specific countries. He says the process will help South Sudan to provide better services to its important visitors.
So what we have said is that those VIPs with the diplomatic passport, the consul should send them to the Minister of Interior and then pass them on to the Minister of Foreign Affairs, because these diplomats are coming here either they want to meet with some important individuals. So we need to have a prior knowledge. They will be issued with the visas with our knowledge so that we can arrange if they are coming to meet the president or a minister or so, then that person will be alerted in time so that if they arrive here, then they do the job they want to come and do.
So my understanding is that this directive is not targeting the members of the Troika.
No, it is not. It is the holders of diplomatic passports who want to come here, because sometimes you get an envoy who wants to come and meet the president. If the Minister of Foreign Affairs has no knowledge, if he just lands at the airport and he arrives at the ministry, he may find the president has traveled or the president is already engaged. Now, why would we expose such a VIP to such an inconvenience?
This is coming at a time when your colleague, the Minister of Information and Government spokesperson, told reporters that members of the Troika are not welcome at the negotiation table if the talks resume, because according to Mr. Michael Makui, the Troika members are partisan, they impose sanctions on South Sudan, so they cannot be mediators. Is there any connection between that and this recent development?
That is also a misquotation. Our spokesperson is actually misquoted. And in fact, today, this morning, he had to hold a press conference in order to correct that misquote. Let me read to you what he said. He said the IGAD-led process to resolve the crisis in South Sudan is essentially an IGAD-driven process and must remain so. This mechanism can be further expanded to include other African states as long as the Republic of South Sudan as a sovereign member state of both IGAD and the African Union is consulted. That's normal. Now, he said the role of non-African actors in facilitating the restoration of peace in South Sudan is profoundly appreciated. However, to avoid making the mechanism too unwieldy, the current status of those non-African actors or observers is appropriate and should be retained and continue. The Troika countries have been there since 2013 when the process started.
The talks have been on and off, and IGAD came and concluded in March saying these talks must include others. That is why they are proposing IGAD plus others, and the others include Troika and 5 other African countries to put their horses in the race so that you and the rebels can come to terms and sign a peaceful, comprehensive peace agreement.
The mediators are not supposed to do that. There is the head of state and there is the chairperson of head of state, and this must be consulted among the heads of state. And that's why I say, this is why a lot of misquotation is coming, because the sources of that proposal have not followed its right procedure as it should. So I would like to repeat that the role of Troika will continue as it used to be.
What is wrong if Troika becomes an active part in the negotiations?
It is already an active part. We have not stopped that. This is what I'm saying. They will continue to do that active part. There is no problem. They go across the board. They can meet the communities, they can meet the states, they can meet the governors, they can meet the people of South Sudan. They equally meet the mediators, they equally meet the heads of the state, they even meet the principals and negotiate Why should they abandon this role? Why should they narrow what they want to do?
That's Barnaba Marielle Benjamin, South Sudan's Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation. He was speaking to me from Juba earlier today. Meanwhile, the SPLM in opposition is criticizing the Kiir administration for targeting diplomats from some countries that have been trying to bring peace to South Sudan. The rebels' chairman for external relations, Diu Matok, says Juba's decision comes at a bad time.
Actually, this is very unfortunate, you know, that these Western diplomats are denied access to Juba. We know very well that these diplomats are working very hard since last year to see into it that we have peace in our country. It is important for them to go to Juba to consult with the government officials, including the president. And then they move around to the areas which are controlled by the SPLM, SPLA in opposition, say that they narrow the gap in order to have peace in the country. Now it came to our attention that the Minister of Interior issued a statement denying them access to the country. This is very unfortunate.
Why do you think the government of South Sudan has issued this particular directive?
The government don't have plan to bring peace to South Sudan. These Western diplomats are making a lot of pressure in order to sign a peace agreement, which I believe this is not the case. They are actually part of mediating teams. They are facilitating the process here in Addis Ababa. They are paying money in order to accommodate and facilitate the negotiations. So we believe that it is very important for the mediating team to move around so that the gap is closed.
What is the importance of the Interior Minister being responsible for issuing the visas? Is this an attempt to control who is coming into the country?
The guy is one of strong men which are against peace in the country. He's among the guys who instigated the war in the country. He's one of strong elements from the president area. You know, they have believed that this is their own government. They must have to defend it by all cost. They look into peace process that this is, it will jeopardize their opportunity of ruling the country for a long period.
Where are we now? Has there been any attempt to resume the peace talks?
We are not actually informed about the plan of the ICAT, but let me assure you that we are ready. The SPLM, SPLA is now, the leadership is in Addis Ababa. We are preparing for the consultative meetings, which is going to take place in coming weeks in Pagak. And then we will come back in order to engage the government for negotiation.
That's Diu Matok, the SPLM in opposition chairman for external relations. He was speaking with VOA's James Batty from Addis Ababa yesterday. These days, proper nutrition is not just about getting food to people. Obesity levels in Africa have been skyrocketing among all levels of society. Malnourishment now involves both under- and over-nutrition, and countries like Kenya are struggling to tackle both. Hilary Hula has more for VOA News from Nairobi.
In a health clinic in Mathare, one of Nairobi's roughest slums, the waiting room is filled with families. Here, the charity German Doctors runs a feeding program for malnourished children. Caroline Munyi, a pediatric nurse, says some of the children she sees are in very bad shape.
Last week on Friday, we had 35 patients we have been admitted since January, and most of them with kwashiorkor, which kwashiorkor is lack of protein. I remember at one time we had more than 250 patients we were feeding every day. It was overwhelming.
But a line of street vendors outside the clinic represents a different face of Kenya's malnutrition problem. Mathare street food consists of different types of fried dough, flattened into chapatis, deep-fried as pastries, or packaged into oily samosas. Local residents, says Munyi, eat a lot of it.
There are people actually who rely on street food wholly because she can't afford fuel in the house. So they want the ready-cooked food, which they consider much cheaper.
Even among the poor, she says, too much street food leads to obesity. In fact, Munyi says the number of obesity-related cases in the local hospital has nearly doubled since last year. Like much of Africa, Kenya's obesity rates have been steadily climbing. About 25% of Kenyan women are now obese, and for urban women, this rises to 40%. Among the growing middle class, this obesity epidemic looks a lot like it does in the West. Working women have less time to cook healthy meals, while people get less exercise and eat more processed foods. But Elizabeth Kimani, who works with Nairobi's African Population and Health Research Center, says that in slums, obesity can be a sign not of overnutrition, but of malnutrition. The poorest rely heavily on cheap foods that are high in fat but low in nutrients, she says, which can cause both obesity and stunting.
We found that about 43% of women who are overweight have stunted children. So we are talking of coexistence in the same household, not even just in the community.
In fact, she says, the poor may have an even higher chance of becoming obese than those who grow up well-fed.
Evidence has shown that if you are stunted when you're very young, you are likely to be obese later in life. So that could also be the reason why we are having very many stunted children, but we have quite a number of obese or overweight adults.
Kimani adds that the growing ranks of overweight Africans is starting to take its toll, as more and more develop conditions like diabetes and hypertension.
They are burdening the healthcare system, actually. In the past, people used to die of maybe infectious diseases, but now we are realizing that a lot of people are dying from these metabolic diseases, and it's actually costing the country so much. We are in a transition where this is happening all over Africa.
Kimani says more effort is needed to educate the public about proper nutrition and exercise. The ingredients of processed foods should be controlled as well, she says. But with nutritionists in Africa now fighting on two fronts, keeping people healthy is becoming more complex every day. Hilary Hewler for VOA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Ashao by a traditional Zande group from Western Equatorial State. We have been listening to a traditional Zande group from Western Equatoria with the song Ashao. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.